we could start with, we have listed KPFA, KPFT.
Thank you.
We said tradition.
I want to start off with a couple of logistical things. First of all, I haven't officially, as a general manager, walked the office to Houston, so you've been here 2 days. Welcome to town. I hope you are having fun.
Yeah.
To stand before y'all this afternoon. Tonight y'all are going out to dinner at a place called Baba Yaga's, which is in Montrose, and it's about 3 blocks from KPFT. And I ran out and made up little maps that I will hand out so that those of you who are going to be needing rides to get to Baba Yaga's can then, after you have this great meal, lots of vegetarian food, you can then walk the 3 blocks from the restaurant to KPFT and just, you know, for a constitutional in the lovely autumn evening, and come over to KPFT for a station tour and our Halloween karaoke too. The horror continues. You're not required, though you are encouraged to pick one of the 3,000 songs that are available. And if you need help singing, there'll be a backyard full of families and kids and staff to help sing with you.
Maybe some people from TV will come.
Maybe
invite
some TV.
Just don't film us.
Come on, y'all are welcome too. I'm passing around a sign-up sheet because back here next to this brag board about KPFT,
I have a sign-up sheet.
Brag board.
I'm passing around a sign-up sheet so that you can choose either the blue KPFT T-shirt or the stylish charcoal gray limited edition 35th anniversary KPFT T-shirt. So just pass this around. I'll collect it up at the end of my report. And if you make it to karaoke, we'll give you your shirt. If you sing the song, you get to keep the shirt. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And if you don't sing the song, we'll give you the shirt tomorrow. My report's in the book. Okay. It's approximately 70% of the way from the front. After tab 6 and very close to tab 7, and it basically tells you everything that I wanted to say, and so I really don't have a whole lot to say more than that, except this, that this report was actually typed, I think, a couple days before Katrina hit. The national office wanted this stuff, you know, so I threw together this report, and it goes over a lot of important things, and I hope you take... I try to concentrate the reports to the local board and the national board to a page. If I'm really getting into it, it might go to a second page. But really, I know that you have a lot to digest, and it's all there. Except for one of the most important things that's happened since we met in June in Berkeley, which is that we successfully got our license renewed on July 31st. So KPFT is guaranteed to be on the air for 8 more years. That's a great thing, and it's not in that report, so I apologize. You know, additionally, some of the information is a little outdated because the numbers are based on what had happened as up through the end of August. We successfully completed our summer fun drive. We did a 9-day fun drive in 8.5 days. We have a buyback program that we've tried now for 3 consecutive fun drives. We're in the midst of this buyback program right now where we challenge our listeners through a mail campaign and through on-air announcements to go ahead and pledge early. And for every $1,000 we raise, we reduce the fun drive by an hour. Our goal is to raise $48,000 this time and take 2 days off the fun drive. We were able to take essentially 1 day off the fun drive last time in August. It was supposed to go through 6 p.m. on Friday, and we ended it on Thursday evening. So that was really good, and it was successful. And I think people appreciate the fact that that we're offering them options on you know, minimizing the amount of days that we're doing on-air pitching. Because we, as other stations have had the same experience, have increased our pitch days from what used to be 42 days a year up to the mid-50s. And that to us is too many. My goal when I was hired nearly 4 years ago was to take the then current plan of 3 2-week fund drives a year and eliminate one of them and go to just two. And instead we've grown to where we've needed to do a fourth, though just for 1 week in August. And that to me is a trend I'd like to not continue. I'd like to reverse that and go the way I had hoped we would when I was hired back in February of 2002. So the license renewal is a big thing. It's a great thing. It means KPFT is on the air until 2013 unless we do something really bad. We as a network, I'm speaking of the greater we, all of us here. Some other things that are mentioned in my report include the fact that KPFT had a very large increase in our CPB money. I know this spring there were a lot of concerns with CPB reducing funding for public broadcasting, especially for community radio. And we were told then in the spring that our then $86,000 grant was going to be reduced to $68,000. It had been $135,000 the year before I came here and had been consistently getting diminished. But we've been now recategorized as a majority-minority staff station. And we are now getting $205,000 from CPB in this current fiscal year. In addition to that, we applied for and received a digital conversion grant for $75,000 that we were just notified in September about that. There's also a couple of lawsuits that are pending. One that was instigated by someone against Pacifica and a programmer at KPFT that will be dealt with, I believe, tomorrow and probably in an executive session. So I won't talk about that except that, you know, it'll be talked about tomorrow. The other one is one that we have instituted against the Harris County Appraisal District. And we're going to court on November 30th. We want back the $11,000 in property taxes that we paid this year for Lovett Boulevard's property because we feel that we're due an exemption as a 501c3 nonprofit educational foundation. There are 20 exemptions available to institutions in Texas. They claim that based on a 1983 ruling by then Attorney General Jim Maddox, that KPFT and Pacifica don't qualify under any of these definitions. We claim that we qualify under at least three. Mike Martin's working with this case, and we're very confident that we're going to get back that $11,000 and won't have to continue paying property taxes on the property that Pacifica owns here in Houston. Another really successful thing I'd like to mention that I don't know that it's in the report is that we have been doing a lot of youth outreach with our interim program director, who actually is sitting right behind me, who is a youth himself. But he had a summer youth program, and I don't know if y'all were interviewed by this little assistant program director who's been wandering through the building today, but Luke has been a pretty magical kid around the station, and he's just one of a number of kids who have come to the station over the course of the summer. We've got a youth training program, and we've been doing a lot of real interesting work with some wonderful kids. We've also instituted a outreach program with a in-town high school, Waltrip High School, through their theater arts communication department, and we're going to be doing more work with them. They're actually bringing a busload of kids from that arts communication department to the station. We've been meeting with the folks there, and Ernesto and I and some other folks from the station, including some of the kids from the youth program from the summer, have gone out and spoken to this high school group, and they're all very excited about getting involved in radio, and they want to create a high school radio magnet program at this high school. And so we're very excited about that. Another real exciting thing that I'd like to just mention is our work with the Program Council. Now, the Program Council is something KPFT didn't have. And collaborating with the LSB, Mike Martin, then chair, and myself signed a contract of sorts last November, creating a Program Council that was equally drawn from LSB members, listener members, and staff members. These 12 people work with the program director on program policy, visioning, and more practical actual grid work on the schedule. And because it's something new and because of, I guess, logistical issues, this group didn't even meet until May, practically a half a year after we birthed this council. But in the few months that they've actually been around, they've begun some amazing work. And I don't really want to get into so much what they've done or not done, but what I'd like to just mention is the way they do it. Because these folks come together, and it's like they each bring a dish, and it becomes a little potluck gathering, and it's a consensus-building, collegial. Everyone gets to express themselves. No one has thrown a chair at anyone. And it's a very civil kind of wonderful experience, and I'm very hopeful that this program council we have great hopes that they're going to do a lot of really good work, and have already begun doing some of the logistical back work, studying the history of the program grid at KPFT and looking at the community as compared to the community that currently exists at KPFT. So we're very upbeat and hopeful for continued good work with our program council as it evolves into its second year. As far as this stuff behind me, we start our fund drive Tuesday morning at 6 o'clock. So I'm trying to keep my batteries charged up. Our goal is $375,000. It's the biggest goal of the year. The biggest one's the fall. Winter is second. Spring is third. We kind of mop it up in August with what we need to get through the fiscal year. I've already mentioned these other issues, except for the ADA. When you get to the station tonight, you'll notice that our ramp project was completed since probably the last time y'all were here. The conversion of what used to be a kitchen into a bathroom kitchen, into a kitchen, and then into an actual accessible wheelchair disability access bathroom. It's the nicest bathroom in the building, and it's completely functional now. We've had ADA folks walk through the building and tell us that we've done a great job. We've worked with the city of Houston, and we've received green light on every issue of occupancy certification, from heating, air conditioning, electrical, plumbing, and structural work. And that's all stuff that's been an issue for a long time at that 90-year-old house. So that's good progress. The program director search has been ongoing since the spring. I was given, because y'all know that the LSB is supposed to screen a pool of candidates, give them to the GM. I got a pool of candidates. We posted this job after the May fund drive. I got the pool of candidates last week. Practically speaking, I won't even interview the finalists for this position until after the fund drive, probably the week before Thanksgiving. And at the earliest, probably a new program director, a regular program director instead of an interim program director, will be on board either at the beginning or early part of December of this year. And that's really my report, except for one final kind of an aside, really. You've heard a lot of public comments. I bit my tongue. I didn't give a public comment, though I'm a member of the public, and I can comment as good as anyone, I think. The lack of civility sometimes in Pacifica is very disturbing. And since we last met with each other as a board in Berkeley in June, just at KPFT, we have had resignations of three LSB members, all really good people.
Yeah.
George Tennant, y'all heard about him earlier in one of the public comments. Y'all know Ngozi Kamau, and that was kind of gut-wrenching to lose her, as was Mike Martin, you know, less than a half a year ago. And then Yolanda resigning basically live and in color here this morning. This is a real disturbing problem, I think. It's counterproductive when people of integrity and passion are driven away from us. For whatever reason, Pacifica chases away some of the best and brightest folks. And in Houston, we get brushed as the plantation station, and you look around and the board reps are white, the manager's white, the interim program director isn't. LSB chair is. But, you know, and rightly so. The preponderance of membership on our local station board is white. I can only say this, that I'm afraid that, you know, and maybe I'm going to say the wrong thing here, and you know what? That's okay. I think that white people have more privilege to waste time than people of color and people of lesser means. And that cuts through class and gender and race. And I think that it's to our disadvantage. It chases away good people who don't have the means to waste the amount of time that we waste as a group. And it's to our detriment as an organization. I don't have an answer, but the lack of civility, I mean, even just today in public comment, if you don't have personal integrity, you don't have much of anything, I feel. And when someone gets up in public comment and calls you a liar on TV, in front of a board, in front of your community, that's an attack on your integrity as a person. And I take that personally. And, you know, there's a part of me that doesn't want to be involved in an organization that tolerates that. And so I'm just going to close with that it's a disturbing trend. I don't have the solution. Collaboratively, I hope that we can work toward finding that solution, because if we can't, then we're doomed to ever fulfill the mission that Lou Hill put forth 56 years ago.
Thank you, Jay. Thank you, Dwayne, for your report. We will entertain questions for 5 minutes, and I have a number of folks on the stack, so I am going to be timing. Dave?
Dwayne, just one thing on that. You know, our experience on the question of civility and struggle, it's because people are badly behaved, but a lot of times it's because they're not heard and they don't get any impact. It's one thing to have proportional representation. It's another to be on the board and not get any outcomes that you want. And one of the things that happened in L.A. that I have to help credit Eva for was even people who were very hostile to her and very mistrustful, she was willing to work with and make sure there were some outcomes happening at the station that they felt good about. And that really turned down a lot. So rather than saying the way you're behaving in reaction to what you're upset about disqualifies us from further conversation, she was willing to sort of wade into that, and that was really helpful. The other thing I want to ask you as a question is, I know you guys have been doing it for a long time, but I'm really concerned that Pacifica is spending money to subsidize Public Radio International and the BBC and their other programming, and I wanted to know what you thought. I'm going to make a motion. I don't think it's in order now that the programming committee look at that. I think we should be spending money on producing Pacifica programming. I wanted your thoughts on how the community here would react.
Well, KPFT in particular has a relationship with PRI that predates its existence. It goes back to the relationship with the BBC when KPFT decades ago would just stick a shortwave radio up on the roof and pull in shortwave news to augment the local news program called Life on Earth. And that's become institutionalized more or less in Houston, the relationship between the BBC and KPFT. When American Public Radio came into being and has subsequently morphed into Public Radio International, I know I wasn't program director back then. It was right after I left in 1990 that this happened. that KPFT was granted a waiver by the National Board of Pacifica to carry programming from outside sources like this that were actually funded by underwriters and such. So, you know, we have things on our station no one else has. But I know from personal experience that as Houston has become a more international, cosmopolitan city, the amount of people who mention that BBC has been their entry point, that they have either been turned on by music or by news, particularly the BBC, that has served as the gateway to Democracy Now, to all the other public affairs and news programs that KPFT produces, I think is a great thing. And, you know, Houston is a much different city than it was when it was founded 35 years ago, and is much more international. We have 65 consulates in Houston, last time I counted. I think it may be more by now. But, you know, the relationship we have to the rest of the world, the amount of immigrants that we have in particular from Asia and from Central and South America, the Caribbean and West Africa, there are a lot of people to whom the BBC is a touchstone. And they're smart enough to incorporate that into their worldview and not take that as the gospel, but use that as a way of touching base, in some cases, with their home countries. Because the BBC, like it or not, has outposts around the planet left over from
the British Empire.
The Empire, right. And, you know, they have a reporter in Ulaanbaatar, Mongolia. They have reporters not in Zimbabwe, but in pretty much every other African country. And I think that's important. I think it's appreciated in Houston. It gets a lot of support. So I support it. I listen to it. I would find KPFT to be diminished were it not carrying it.
Can I just ask that in questions and then responses, if we can just keep the time down, because we are over 5 minutes and we have a huge stack, right?
Sorry. Yes. By the way, thank you for your openness. I have two basic issues I'm concerned with. One of them is related to what you just mentioned earlier. Well, actually, maybe I should start with the ADA. A gentleman named Scott came earlier and referred to a feeling of being excluded. Now, based on what you're saying, it would seem that maybe he's referring to meetings organized outside the station?
Yes.
Can you clarify?
He's referring to events that were maybe sponsored by KPFT or organizations affiliated with KPFT producers that were held in venues that were not accessible.
Do you see any role for the station in having an impact on what's announced?
I think his bringing that up has already had an impact in at least one case. Yeah.
Okay, the other issue is I have a one-page document which says requests that KPFT 9 top national news programs either canceled or placed in electoral time slots.
Mm-hmm.
On the face of it, it looks worrisome. Can you tell us what's going on?
Well, I haven't read this latest edition of this, but I've read a continuing series of these denigrating reports that have appeared over the last half a year. I find them to be, in some cases, wrong and inaccurate, or at least shaded in a way to make it not quite what it really is. I could go through and spend a half an hour disputing pretty much line by line what's on there, and I don't think it's
factual to say whether these top shows, or at least some of them, were actually not changed, or that there was a.
Well, you know, let me just illustrate one. I mean, the Democracy Now! Thing, it's like it was on at 7 and then it disappeared. Well, it was on at 7 for about six and a half weeks. It's been on at 9 o'clock and raises 25% of our funds and has for as long as it's been on. And it's now on at 6 o'clock in the evening as well. So it's actually on more than it ever was, and I think it has even more of an impact. Free Speech Radio News, it's still on. Counterspin, it's still on. Making Contact is not on. Alternative Radio, it's still on. Flashpoints is still on, though only 4 nights a week, not 5. The Haiti Show is on. TUC Radio is on. Women's International News Gathering is on. Some of them have been moved into different time slots, but, you know, they're still there. Making Contact is the one, I guess you would say, casualty of all the program changes. But on balance, I think, you know, it's not that it was taken off to never come back. It's actually, again, these changes were made just before the program council ever first met. It came out of a sense of needing to do something after two consecutive unsuccessful fund drives preceding our spring fund drive. And we didn't want to continue this downward trend that in the forecasting Lonnie did back in February showed KPFT coming up as possibly negative $150,000 at the end of the fiscal year if these trends continued. As things turn out, we've had two consecutive successful fund drives. I can't say it's because of these changes. I don't think it is. But they've been successful. And, you know, this is a transitional thing. The program council's looking at a holistic view of the schedule. They know that these are all important shows and should be on in the places that they have the most impact.
We're out of time.
Can I ask, is the program council, is it advisory? Or do they actually vote and the decisions have to be carried out?
They vote, and if I disagree with what they'd like to do, I have to justify it to the program, to the LSB, and the LSB can hold it against me in the MSRC review if they don't like.
Okay, we're out of time on this agenda item. We do have four people on the stack. Can I
move to extend by 8 minutes, given that this is the host day? We are.
I'll send
All right, it's been moved and seconded. All those in favor?
That's TV station, not ours.
Majority.
7, 8, 9. All those opposed? 1, 2, 3. The motion carries. Body.
Thank you, and how are you? We're in your city now, so that's kind of cool. I just wanted to get an update from you on flashpoints. As you know, at the last time we met at the Berkeley meeting in June, I'd asked about flashpoints. Since then, we've talked on the telephone. I've talked with Nesta as well. Wanted to get an update as to status. I also know that the program council, as you had just mentioned, is looking at the entire grid. But I also want to let people know that Flashpoints was at 7 o'clock
right.
at live time, real time, not at 11 p.m. You mm-hmm. mentioned that Flashpoint's still on at 11. Don't think a whole lot of folks can be up that late.
Right.
So what's the update on Flashpoints returning?
The only update that I can share with you is that Dennis has spoken with the program director this week about participating in our fund drive that starts next week. It's scheduled to remain Monday through Thursday at 11 o'clock for the time being as the program council works through several different proposals that they have before them right now, and that we're looking at making any subsequent program changes probably at the beginning of January or early January so that they can become institutionalized before our February fund drive.
Teresa,
can you tell us about the power? Because I didn't hear you talk about power.
Okay, yeah, that's another thing. I'm sorry. There's been a lot of really great things, honestly, that have happened in Houston in the last few months. And one of them is that after kind of every time I would talk to John Krigler on the phone, and these are not being charged to Pacifica because if I speak to him for less than 8 or 10 minutes, he doesn't bill Pacifica for the time, and I know that, and he knows that I know that. So this is not about charging the network money. But I've been on John for a number of years about finding whose desk these pieces of paper have been sitting on, and following the NFCB meetings in April. He found the person who had this piece of paper at the FCC, was able to talk to them and find out how to move the process forward. And then along with the consulting engineer from Pacifica, Don Mussel, we dotted all the I's and crossed the T's. And this piece of paper that had been languishing since May of 1997 finally popped out of the wherever it pops out at the FCC. And KPFT was given officially given a construction permit to build a 100,000-watt transformer. So I have to say this, though, that the one issue with that is that the current transmitter that we have will not go to 100,000 watts. It will only go as far as about 72 to 75, and that's if it's cranked up to 11. And so we have to get a new transmitter, and because we were given a license to go to 100. We're not allowed to creep toward it, so I can't have our engineer crank us like from 28 where we are now to 50 until we get the money to buy the new one to get to 100. We have to stay where we are till we get the new box and then just pop onto the big number. So we're looking at raising that money. We have 3 years. If we don't use it, we lose it.
Let's raise Bob. It in this pledge drive.
Thanks for your work, Dwayne. I want to follow up on the program changes because just the one example you gave about flashpoints moving to 11 p.m. and some of the other time changes, I think would it be fair to say that they move these public affairs shows into much lower listenership times and put music in higher listenership times? Is that...
No, actually, the biggest change was that we shuffled the programs that were in the time slots between 6 and 8 p.m. The majority of all those programs on that list were on between 6 and 8, Monday through Friday. And by making the choice to rerun Democracy Now at 6 p.m., so that the people who can't hear it at 9 o'clock in the morning, where we know it works, would have access to hearing it at 6, hopefully... So that took off most of those shows.
Right.
They all had
aside
to find new homes.
Now that FSRN was moved out of drive time and a couple of others, and I'm troubled by the idea that what should be the most important and hopefully widely available for listening programming is replaced by music.
It's not been replaced by music, Bob. The only part that's been replaced by music is we tried an experiment of creating a strip from 2 to 3 in the afternoon, and rather than have this one strip of informational programming out there in between two different music program blocks, that we took FSRN, which comes to Houston live on the satellite at 3, we put it into a block with this other hour. So we'd have 90 minutes of informational stuff instead of just a loose hour. I don't particularly think it's really working. What that meant was that our 3 to 5 music show became 3:30 to 5:30. That's really the only spot that I can think of off the top of my head that what you're saying is true.
Okay, sir.
Thank you, Dwayne, for your detailed report. I'm not going to comment on the details of your programming here at the local station. I know that demographics and your needs and necessities and your culture in which you're rooted here, they will demand different kind of programming than where I am located, or where D.C. people are located, or New York. Yeah. So I respect that cultural kind of identity and your needs and necessities at local level. I'm going to comment on something that made me very, very proud of KPFT Houston. And Million Man March in Washington, D.C., when they mentioned one radio station that was the most outstanding in coverage of a hurricane victim, KPFT, I felt very proud of them.
Thank you, sir. Steve, and this is the last question because we have 1 minute.
Okay. I just wanted to echo what Sarf said. I think the cultural programming in areas like Washington, D.C. and Houston, where culture is not represented on the airwaves anymore than news and public affairs, I wouldn't prioritize one over the other necessarily. But I wanted to ask a question. When you're talking about the new transmitter, you also mentioned a grant for digital conversion. You're not going to buy a new transmitter for digital conversion at the old power level, are you? Or
no, what we're hoping to do is buy a hybrid that will allow a digital analog conversion so that we can get something that will do 100,000 analog and the 2,000 digital. And Muscle's looking to see if CPB will let us use that grant money toward that sort of dual-purpose transmitter. If not, we have to just raise the 100,000 watt amount separately.
So apply the grant to the power up increase is what you're...
They won't let us apply a digital conversion grant to just an analog transmitter, and
right.
We're asking them to let us get a dual mode transmitter that will allow us to do both. A dual mode? Between $150,000 and $225,000, roughly.
Okay, that exhausts our time for the KPFT. I know, but we already had a stack when we extended time, and
okay.
So we didn't go beyond that, and we've exhausted time. I apologize, LaVarne. Hopefully you and Dwayne can talk offline. Thank you, Dwayne, for
Thank
your
you.
Report.
Thank you, Dwayne. Thank you, Inesco.
Okay, now moving on to...